people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to just go all the way to the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go downstairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10.
The red light. The red light. The red light. everyone. Welcome back. It's Eddie Solis, your host at Los Angeles Nista. I want to thank our guest who came in from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., Robert Schober. The guy's directed videos for Metallica and Devo, B-52s, Green Day, The Killers, and he was nice enough to stop by and talk about what he's up to and how he likes taking the subway around L.A. and doing his thing, you know, taking his Instagram pictures and scouting locations. That was great. But tonight's the first ever doubleheader. We're going into a second episode right now with in-studio guest Salman Agha. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm stoked. I'm really, like, starstruck because I've been skateboarding since 1987.
Oh, okay.
Well. No, I'm stoked, yeah. So we're all happy because Jeremy here, he's from, Virginia, the D.C. area?
Pennsylvania,
uh-huh. Yeah. And he's actually been a Pizzanista customer.
The meat Jesus, man. That's the one.
Yeah. And when I moved to Boyle Heights right over 6th Street, you guys were like down to deliver and we would just order up. And then finally it got to a point where like, well, man, we got to go in there and we just cruise in and, you know, participate in what you're serving. So what I want to do is I want to paint a clear picture for people who don't know who you are.
Okay.
You know, you come from the skateboarding world.
I do.
You do.
Yeah.
Now, when did you turn pro?
I turned pro in 91.
And was that
right after the summer? Back then, you know, there was what's called the NSA. It was a National Skateboard Association.
Games contest, right?
Yeah, and it was started by Tony Hawk's father.
Frank Hawk.
Yeah, Frank Hawk. And, you know, you used to kind of go through this whole system of, like, qualifying in local contests. It would turn into regionals. It would turn into nationals. And then you would go through that process. And then usually the guy that won the nationals kind of, like, got ushered into the pro ranks. And during my, like, the last guy to turn pro that way was a skater called Lance Conklin, who turned pro for Powell. He was a street skater. And, you know, all of the generation, he was part of my generation, but the generation of pros that I turned pro with in the 90s kind of bypassed that. That died.
Right. Like a Thibault.
Well, no, he was a generation before
with
me.
With Guerrero.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
So it would be like
Sheffy.
Yeah, Sheffy was part of that kind of a little bit later, but like myself, Mike Carroll, Henry Sanchez, Javonte Turner, Rudy Johnson, right. Guy Mariano, Paula Diaz.
Yeah.
Like these were all the guys that were turning pro at that time and sort of, you know, the new way.
Well, it was like the unconventional way. It wasn't the same framework.
No, it was totally different. I mean, it was just skateboarding was like going through this evolution and basically, I mean, to this day, contests are kind of irrelevant. They're relevant in the sense that, you know, some skaters are able to make a living doing it, but they don't really determine, I mean, culturally who represents skateboarding.
Exactly.
You know
exactly.
I mean?
So, I mean, is it safe to say that you turned pro when the vert thing died?
In essence, yeah. In essence,
there was a shift.
Yeah, there was a shift. I mean, skateboarding went from skateboarding in pools to then it transitioned into the vert ramp, which looks like a U for people who don't know. It looks like a big U.
Yeah.
The letter U.
Yeah.
Yeah. It went to that. And then a lot of the vert, I guess a lot of the pros from, you know, the era of the 80s were actually kind of bored with the U because they were so used to skating around corners and things in pools. And anyhow, yeah, that kind of got stale and, you know, street skating was so accessible to the youth, you know, so it was kind of like the youth took over.
Right. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, you could just like watch a video, get inspired, whether it was like a World Industry video or whatever it was, and just get your board and go try to like recreate that on the curbs and schoolyards. There was no, you know, because all the skate parks closed.
Yeah, there was really no public facilities at the time, you know. There were a few lingering like Del Mar, Upland, down here, down south. Campbell, Winchester, those were closed. There might have been some stuff back east like Kona. But for the most part, yeah, there weren't public facilities for young people to like go hang out at and skate. So really it became urban environments, you know, inner cities, San Francisco, LA, Chicago, New York, Philly, places like that where, you know, Toronto, Vancouver, where, you know, skateboarders just took to the streets and just started, you know, imitating guys like Mark Gonzalez and Nodis. Sure. And Jim and Tommy and guys that were like in the streets, you know.
Right. Now, I mean, that must have been, you know, obviously the economy was different for every industry. There must have been, you know, quite an amazing ride for a young man to be able to travel the world doing what he wants to do. And you must have seen a lot of places and connected with a lot of people around the world.
Yeah, it was real. I mean, you know what? What's interesting, it's interesting that you say that because in the 80s, I remember very clearly, distinctly in Thrasher magazine, there was an article that came out called Codename Viper. And it was really interesting because what interested me was just that a lot of times you would see in an article teams traveling together.
Okay.
Well, this was a really interesting article because it had like Hosoi, Cab, Mark Gonzalez. You had all these guys from different teams that were on a trip traveling to Europe. And I just loved the photography and I loved that they were skating all these amazing places around the world together and they weren't on the same team, but they were exploring. And so, yeah, to your point, I did get to travel and still get to travel.
Right.
And that is one of the main, I guess, draws for me as a young person into the skateboarding world. I was just so excited about the possibility of being able to travel and meet people, you know, try, you know, experience different cultures.
And that was before the internet.
So you could way
just,
before.
Like, you had to like do this.
Yeah, way before. It was like, you gotta, you know, I mean, we read magazines, you know, we just read magazines and waited for videos to come out, you know, to, and VHS videos or beta even.
Oh, sure. I mean, I remember like, you know, like, man, you know.
I'm old.
Like 88, 89, like they would have like premieres of PAL videos at a skate shop.
Oh, yeah.
Like a little skate shop and you would sit on the floor and buy hot dogs for a buck and watch, you know, they roll the TV out like in class.
Oh, yeah.
And now you just, you know, YouTube anything.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, back then it was amazing. You know, the anticipation for a new video. I mean, you know what? What's neat about skateboarding culture is there's still the same amount of anticipation, but the dissemination of the video is much quicker, obviously.
Sure.
You know, back then, you know, yeah, you'd see it at a premiere. People would be talking about it for months before they could get the thing duped so that they could actually then deliver it into stores and then it could get popped into the VCR for people to play.
Absolutely.
So,
there was a big rental market and a buyer's market.
Absolutely. And there was a lag time, you know, because, you know, it kind of hit the U.S. and then it kind of hit Europe and then it hit Asia. And it's like there was kind of this. Now, you know, skaters are progressing at the same level and at the same rate all over the world because of the dissemination of media and video games. Back then, you know, California kind of had an upper hand on progression. Not so these days.
No, it's very true. I mean, Southern California culture, a certain style of music, it could be hip hop and punk and then skateboarding and surfing that all comes out of here, you know, and it's like people could just see what's happening now.
Yeah.
And attach themselves to it. When before it was like, you know, you wait for a band or a skate team to come around and it's like you're waiting and there's anticipation.
Totally.
And you see them. Now, you know, and yeah, it's a different framework, a different mind frame. Things are accessible.
Yeah.
And it's kind of exciting though.
If you're productive, great.
You know, for someone like you who's, you know, involved in skateboarding and has an independent business in the food industry, I think you could really connect with people.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I think it's empowering. You know, there are a lot of people all over the world who want to participate in these subcultures and be a part of them and have access to what's going on in them. And I think that, you know, technology has allowed people to have that. And I think it's really cool, you know, and it allows people to create on their own and express themselves on their own, you know, with, YouTube channels and Instagram. Sure. And, I mean, it's cool.
Everyone has a platform.
It's like, it's so decentralized. I mean, it's, if you have the balls and you have the will and you have the drive and you have the determination and you have the vision, then you can do it. Just do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So tell me what made you come from the Bay Area to downtown LA? Because, I mean, you know, from me being involved, you know, skateboarding since 1987 and hearing your name, you know, and seeing the magazine, you know, early 90s, mm-hmm. mid 90s, no internet. You just kind of look and you get excited and you see the videos and you go to demos. You know, you were so heavily immersed in the Bay Area. Like when I thought of your name, I thought of, you know, Tommy G and Thebo and Mickey Reyes, all that.
Right.
You're just so cemented up there. And then when I heard you were down here, I was like, wow, that's great. And and on top of that, you weren't just down here, but you opened a pizza place.
Yeah.
What made you make the move? Was it the pizza place or you just moved here first?
No, I actually, when I first moved to Southern California, I moved to Huntington Beach. And I was, so I was down here right at the turn of the last century.
Y2K?
Millennium, turn of the last millennium. I moved down here. I was still skating professionally, obviously, then. And all my sponsors were down here. You know,
this is where the industry is. I mean, a lot of it. Right?
A lot of it, yeah. And, you know, I ride for Black Label skateboards and, you know, Vans shoes, and with the exception of like Independent Trucks, which is still, you know, up north. Most of my sponsors were down here, and I thought it would just be better to be, in proximity to them. You know, just it's easier to get things done. So I moved down here, and that was really the main reason for that. So I moved down here, and then I met my wife, 8 years ago or 9 years ago. And then I had been living in Huntington. She was living in LA. After we got engaged, we decided we'd stay in Los Angeles.
Cool.
I was interested in being up here as well. So, you know, I had a place down there. We sold that place, have our place up here. And we've been in what's called the arts
sure.
district now in downtown Los Angeles for about 9 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we
lived here. We just lived here, you know.
Right, right. So when did Pizza Nista open?
Well, it opened in October of 2010.
Okay.
So we opened then, and we just really love our neighborhood and thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could do something to contribute to the development of the neighborhood as opposed to just living there.
Right. You know?
And so we noticed that someone had taken over ownership of Tony's Bar and thought, how cool would it be if we could get next door to do a little restaurant? You know, it's a freestanding building. It's got a parking lot, and it'd be really symbiotic to have some food with the bar. And
sure.
We just saw the potential and went for it.
Right. And to back up a few, living out here for 9 years, I mean, downtown was not developed as it is now with nightlife and all the things going on. It was way different.
Oh, it was way different. I mean, even 5 years ago.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe where we're thinking about it, but, you know, we would still be hard pressed to think that. 5 years ago, I wouldn't really be thinking we would have opened something in our neighborhood. It was still
kind of idle, right? Like rough.
It was idle. It was rough. It was still kind of filthy, you know. So, it takes courage, I think, to open stuff downtown.
You have a vision first.
Yeah, you got to have a little courage and vision, and I think a little intuition. You know, just being around, I think. Where in our neighborhood, we had a little intuition, and we'd like to grow. And that's one of our problems is we live in the neighborhood where we open our first location. When we want to do another one, it's like, well, we don't live in the place where we're going to do the next one. So it's very difficult to identify all the things we sort of identified in our first location for another one.
Right. So let me ask you this. did you always know within that you would eventually get into the restaurant business, or is that just very kind of like an abrupt thing that's, you know, that just kind of transpired, like, hey, I'm going to do it?
Well, you know, it's funny. I grew up in a family that owned restaurants, and I actually thought as a young person that I would never own a restaurant.
Really? You told yourself?
Yeah, I actually thought that. I was like, I'm never doing that. It's so much work and the hours, and you know, I just saw how much time it took to.
You really sign up for it.
You got to be committed to it.
But maybe because the skateboarding background.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you.
Yeah.
Went out there.
The nice thing about growing up in the restaurant business is I actually learned a lot of things about how to operate a business and how not to, you know. So, you know, with Pizzanista, we decided it would be in our best interest, and I think in the best interest of the business and just for our clientele, to just keep it very simple. You know, it's just simple.
Supply and demand.
We just do pizza and salad, and that's it. You know, we're going to have beer and wine shortly, but, you know, it's just, we're not doing sandwiches. We don't do wings.
Pastas.
We don't do pasta. It's like, we only do one size pizza, too.
So right, right.
You only get one size or slices, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, I think that's clever, though, because I think when you, no matter what you're selling to people, okay, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, any kind of food, clothing. I just think, you know, if you keep it simple, it's going to be timeless.
Yeah. Well,
and people will, you know, always adapt to it, like Levi's.
I hope so.
You know,
I mean, I hope so. Look, we love it. We really are passionate about it. We're just doing our best, you know, and I think that, you know, we have such a great staff. Our staff has really just, been so on board with our ideology of how we want to operate and what we think about our brand and how we want to communicate it. And they have just been so great. And they're a huge, huge, huge part of our success, I think, with the community, you know.
That's really cool. So let me ask you, when did you actually, you know, stop in your tracks and say, okay, this is called Pizzanista and here is what it's going to be. This is the vision. Like, when did your vision come together for this?
Well, it's funny, you know, and a lot of times in business, people, they want to be sure of everything, you know, they
don't want to take the risk.
Exactly. So, and it's good to minimize risk in business as much as possible, but sometimes you have to fire, aim and then get ready. You got to do it backwards. You gotta just go, you know? So, we knew we were going to do a restaurant. We knew it was going to be pizza. You know, my background's in skateboarding. My wife's background's in fine art.
Okay.
And, you know, we have networks in those worlds. And those worlds really complement, like, the brand that we're building and support what we're doing. So it's just kind of evolving in a very organic and natural way, you know? And
you're building really taking your time and building a strong foundation for the brand.
Well, I mean, I guess the difference between us and a lot of restaurants is the way we perceive what we're doing. I mean, I believe that we're a lifestyle brand. You know, we're trying to, you know, Pizzanista represents like what it's like to live in California. You know, we surf, we ride skateboards, we love music. We're into art, mm-hmm. and we try to infuse all of those things into what we're doing. And it's authentic because we actually do those things. I mean,
right.
I surf and I skate and I go to art openings and shows and I like to
check bands out.
I like to go watch shows and my wife likes to do that stuff. And so we're trying to live it.
Right, right. And, you know, as a customer, you know, ordering and you guys delivering. And I just think like the fact that you guys are, you know, in a pretty active part of downtown that wasn't active 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but now it's like it's a great location.
Yeah.
7th Street.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you will go over the bridge of Boyle Heights.
Yeah.
It just shows like you guys are just, you know, really committed to, you know, venturing out a little bit, not too far, but mm-hmm. you're doing what others won't.
Well, the interesting thing about Boyle Heights is that, I think it's come up a handful or two handfuls of times. I mean, people actually call and say, will you deliver to Boyle Heights? And I understand what they're asking.
Right. Because of the reputation.
I do. I get that, you know, and we say, yes, we will deliver. I mean, we are in the middle of our radius, and 2 miles around that is like what yeah. we do.
I mean, just right over the bridge is Boyle Heights.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like less than a mile, right?
Yeah.
Or a mile. So
yeah.
It's not too far off, but so that's pretty amazing. You know what the translation is. It's like, will you deliver? It doesn't mean, like, are we too far? It's like, will you come into the hood?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I know exactly what they're asking.
Right, right.
But, and we will, and we do, and, you know, we really care about our staff, and, you know, we've had conversations about it, and, you know, we can tell, I don't know, they're very aware of, like, when people are ordering, or
pretty intuitive as well, right?
Yeah, I think they're intuitive, and they've done it enough to know that you know, they're not getting into a situation that puts them in danger. You know,
right now, what amazes me about Pizza Nisa also, you've used your restaurant mm-hmm. for gatherings. Like, you guys have done some functions there, right? Wasn't there like a book signing there?
Yeah, we do events. We're gonna do more events. Yeah, and December 1st last year, we had you know, iconic skateboarder Christian Hisoy, someone that I looked up to growing up, an 80s pro who's just had such an amazing life as a pro skateboarder, and, you know, went to prison and got right. out of prison, who, you know,
reinvented himself.
And, you know, he's a pastor now and still very heavily involved in skateboarding. We were really honored to, you know, be able to do an event with him, to have him sign his book. And we designed a pizza box, and he designed a pizza. I mean, the pizza he came up with was insane.
That's awesome.
The Loco Moco. I mean, it had rice and gravy.
It was called the Loco Moco?
Yeah, well, it was like a Hawaiian-style pizza. And
right.
there's a Loco Moco dish. It's like rice and gravy and a hamburger patty and an egg. And that was what was on his pizza.
All that was on the pizza.
Yeah. That was the Hisoy Loco Moco pizza. Yeah.
So if there's Hisoy fans listening to that and want to give that a try, would you make it on demand? Or is that just for the day only? That was for the day only.
That was actually for, I think we did it for about a week. You know, we designed the box, and we actually had the box. We ran the box for the entire month of December with
That's
his.
Awesome.
A friend of ours took a really iconic image of Hisoy doing a rocket air, and that was a sticker, and it was a Hisoy Rockets, which was a real company in the 80s. It was a sticker that they designed, and he took that board and he reshaped it to look like a pepperoni pizza that he was doing a rocket air on.
Wow.
Yeah. What truck? It's amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah, actually, next time you all come in, I still have some of the stickers and stuff and buttons.
I'll hook
you guys up.
The one right here. Yeah. Totally. No, that's great. Now, as far
yeah,
as...
Yeah, we're doing a ton of events. We were just to talk more about that, we were just yesterday, we were down in Costa Mesa at Volcom.
Okay.
They invited us to come to Skate Park of Tampa, host an amateur event called Damn Am. It's got all the hottest, newest... Well, I shouldn't say newest, but... All the, like, kind of cream of the crop emerging amateur skateboarders compete in this event. And they're trying to get a spot to go compete in the Tampa Am, which is the most famous amateur skateboarding event down in Tampa, Florida. And we were there. We had an oven there, and we had our pizza prep station there, and we were doing pizzas at the event.
Yeah, so I saw Soy posting pictures on Instagram.
Yeah, so we're doing actually more of that, where, you know, if people want to hire us to cater, we'll actually come out to an event. We'll bring an oven, and we'll bring it right there and make pizza on the spot.
So you'll bring your brand to the event. That's killer.
Yeah, and we have our tent, and it was really fun.
Well, it just seems like that's like a no-brainer for skate events and maybe even some art events. You know, people want to bring that taste there. It's like, well, why don't you guys come and make it fresh?
Yep.
It's like that's like the new spirit of independent business, I think, for everyone. Like, whether you're doing pizza or, you know, clothing, mm-hmm. you just got to really, like, be proactive.
I think so. I think if you're building a brand and you're wanting to communicate that brand, I think it's important to figure out what you're about or know what you're about, and then, attach yourself to those things as much as possible and go after it, you know? And if you do a good job, and people are happy and you connect with the consumer and the clientele, people will come back, you know?
Yeah, I agree. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
Listen to some tunes. We'll come back with more Pizzanista, Salmonaga, Skid Row Studios. We'll be back. Hey, welcome back to Los Angeles Nista. I'm Edward Solis and our in-studio guest, Salman Aga from Pizza Nista here in downtown on 7th Street. Salman, what's up?
What's up, man? Happy to be here.
Good. I'm stoked. You know what's cool is a lot of my friends are vegan.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. And when I told them you were coming on, I said, listen in. And they're like, man, vegan pizza.
That's awesome.
You know? So you've actually served up some vegan pizza.
Oh, Pizza Nista? Yeah. We're, well, my wife's vegetarian.
Okay.
I'm not, but, well, I guess I am 80% of the time since she's cooking. But, yeah, we, you know, you can't please everybody.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? In business, but, you know, you try to do your best. And, you know, we, I like to eat vegan myself. I mean, I'm an athlete and, I'm eating Cheetos right here.
That's like your little,
in your studio. I'm cheating tonight. I just got done across the street at the Los Angeles Athletic Club because I'm a member there. I'm pretty much there every night.
So you're doing your workout routine.
Yeah, I was doing my workout routine, but back to the vegan deal. Okay. I really like serving the vegan pizzas. I mean, there's great products now. We use Daiya vegan cheese, which is a great product. It melts. It's not soy-based.
So it's a substitute. I mean, it really does a great job to create it that
does.
Same taste.
It does. And then we use this other really amazing product out of Chicago called Upton's Naturals. And what's great is we just had the Natural Foods Expo in Anaheim. We didn't attend this year. Last year we attended. And it was really a neat expo to check out because, you know, you can just see all the interesting sort of like health conscious, eco conscious products that are hitting the market. But what's great is Upton's was out here exhibiting and, you know, we're so thrilled. The other night I was looking at Instagram and I see this post and it's from Upton's Naturals and they're like, we're at Pizza Nista. And I'm thinking, this is insane. Of all the restaurants that this supplier could go to,
right?
They came to Pizza Nista.
And this was how long ago? A couple nights ago. Because they were in town for the
expo. They were in town for the expo. And so I rushed over there.
You weren't even there at the time.
I wasn't there. I just saw it on Instagram. I was nearby. So I rushed over there and I was like, I got to meet these people. We love their product. I really want to at least, you know, see them, meet them, say hi to them. And luckily I caught them in time and got to visit with them a little bit. And they actually ordered, we have a meat version of this pizza called the Meat Jesus.
And okay.
It's got Italian sausage, bacon, thick cut bacon, okay. Really nice, and pepperoni on it. And the whole inspiration for that pizza was that, it's got so much meat on it that you would just die of a heart attack and go to heaven and meet Jesus. That's where the name came from.
That's the intent,
yes.
Right?
So,
meet Jesus.
So the Upton's product is all seitan. So we call that one's called the Satan Meets Jesus, and it's
the
all vegan.
Satan meets Jesus.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It's just we get a kick out of, you know, messing with the names of
creating your items.
Yeah, exactly. So anyhow, they ordered that and loved it and, you know, blasted it out on Instagram. And anyhow, we were just thrilled to meet them. So yeah, we do offer those and they're really delicious. I love them. And my wife loves them and we have a huge following for that.
So is there one vegan pizza on the menu or you make... You have enough substitutes in stock to do many.
Well, we usually always have the vegan cheese slice available to and people who want to add toppings can just add toppings to that
at their discretion.
But we do have a vegan veggie version of like our vegetarian pizza, and we do have the Satan Meets Jesus.
Sure.
And but yeah, I mean, you can get a veggie slice, or I'm sorry, a vegan slice and put veggies on it, or the Upton's Naturals seitan meat products. So, you know.
So let's get a little more in depth about the whole veggie and vegan situation at Pizza Nisa, mm-hmm. with what you deal with. Okay, so obviously the dairy is a no-no for the vegans.
Right.
So you have to substitute that. But, you know, it just seems like, you know, walking in, getting a veggie pizza is no big deal because you have the vegetables on hand and mm-hmm. the cheese, regular, regular cheese. Mm-hmm. But it seems like also, did you ever have vegans say, hey, just take, don't put no cheese?
We've had that also.
Not no substitute, just the sauce and then veggies.
Yep, we've had that also. Yeah.
So that's not out of context in any way. It's just...
Yeah, I mean, if there are some vegans who don't want the, you know, the faux cheese, the diet cheese, right. and they just want to have, you know, the crust and sauce and toppings, and we've done that also.
What's the craziest request you've ever had for
the
a pizza?
Craziest request?
I mean, was there just anything that someone asked for and were like, well, are you kidding me?
You
or
know,
nothing
that,
shocking.
You know, that's a good question. You know what? I don't think we've had any really crazy requests. I mean, no, we really haven't.
I want to
bring some crazy requests, folks.
Yeah, call us at 1-800-893-9562.
Well, you know, we do a macaroni and cheese pizza every Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't had that yet. Tell me about that.
Well, anyhow, I just... In my travels, I somehow recall seeing macaroni and cheese pizza in New York, like walking down the street. And I just thought, we got to do macaroni and cheese pizza, you know? Macaroni and cheese is such a great food to just
so
eat
universal.
By itself.
Everyone loves it.
And to just throw it on the pizza. And it's great. People add toppings to that. Bacon, sausage, jalapenos, wow. like, you know, they go nuts with it.
I want to bring in our soundboard up tonight, Jeremy Hansen. He's actually patronized your restaurant.
Okay.
I want to get his experience. So, Jeremy, you've been a Pizza Nista once? Twice?
I've ordered from there a bunch of times. Mm. But delivery. I've been there probably 3-4 times. And Tony's bar is right next door. So usually it's like drinking and then walk over there and...
What's your favorite kind of pizza to order, like from your experience?
The meat Jesus.
So you know about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've participated in the meat Jesus.
It's awesome.
When you eat that, did you get shortness of breath?
you didn't get the full experience.
I didn't actually meet Jesus yet, but it's a great pizza. I love sausage, man.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
Yeah, meat potatoes really kind of guy, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So as far as like the taste goes, I mean, would you definitely say that, you know, for people listening in or will be listening in tomorrow on the podcast, that they have their own distinct taste happening?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of pizza places popping up downtown.
Sure.
And I think Pizza Nista stands apart from that. And you know, hearing the philosophy behind it,
right.
I think only makes me want to support them even more. So
same
here. The food's great, and obviously the people are really good too.
Yeah, I mean, from going into Pizza Nisa also, I just think that you guys just provide like a really like comfortable environment, clean, safe, you know, no frills, but just really like professional attitude. But everyone's like, you know, everyone's professional where they care enough, but it's not overdone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just feels like, I just feel comfortable all the time.
Well, that's great to
hear. Yeah.
I mean, we strive for that. I mean, you know, when we visit, when we meet with our staff and we visit and talk about Pizza Nista and how we perceive our clientele, you know, we say that our clientele are guests. We don't call people customers. They're our guests. They're coming into Pizza Nista as our guests. So, you know, I think that gives everyone the attitude in our work environment that we want to take care of our guests. They're our guests. It's like we invited them. They're here, or we opened the doors for them to come. You know, they're our guests. Let's take care of them. And we have such an interesting clientele. I mean,
sure. All walks of life.
Look at here. Radio, what do you call this? I don't know. Internet radio.
Established internet radio.
Yeah, internet. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, you got people who are involved in radio.
Right.
People who are involved in art. People who are involved in TV, movies, fashion.
You guys got garlic knots.
Yeah, we have garlic knots.
Right.
It's hard to find in L.A.
Yeah,
good garlic knots is a hard thing to find.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that really quick. I mean, I think we've all traveled across the country, especially you,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing your thing with skateboarding a lot. You know, pizza is like I think it can be a very simple thing, but it's like good pizza. It's like music. There's good pizza and bad pizza, you know? And I think like once you hit that good pizza stride, you'll get a loyal customer. Now, my question to you is, how competitive would you say the pizza market is in LA?
Well, how competitive is the pizza market?
I mean, New York has the reputation for being the pizza city.
You know, it's probably competitive. I don't notice it, you know, honestly. And I think this goes back to the way we think about our business. I don't even think that we're a pizzeria. We're Pizzanista is a lifestyle brand. You know, some lifestyle brands make shoes. Some of them make t-shirts and hoodies. Some of them make music. We make pizza. So we're the food that we make is the medium for us to communicate a certain lifestyle. And that lifestyle is the lifestyle that we live. We surf, we skate,
right?
We like motorcycles, we like art, music. You know, those are the things that...
So the pizza's a language, the thread that connects everybody.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And that's the difference, you know? So we're not really competing on pizza. We're competing on who can promote the lifestyle that we love to live in California better. you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I surf every morning. I skate almost every afternoon. I work in between. And then, you know... I like to go to the athletic club in the evenings. And then
that's great.
My wife and I like to go, like I said, to concerts and art openings. And she surfs with me. And, you know, it's just, that's what we're trying to promote.
That's
I think
amazing.
That
that's
inspiring. Life's so short. It's like, get out and do what you love, you know? And we're going to try to, in a way, inspire folks to do that. You know, by living this lifestyle, like live the lifestyle that you want. If you're into, you know, I guess it goes for me, it goes way back to when I was a kid. You know, I just love to play, you know, that's my thing. I want to be outside playing. So if I'm outside playing, I'm happy. I'm not worried about all the things that are going on in the world that don't concern me.
Because you're creating your own world.
Yeah, exactly. Create the world that you want to live in. And that's essentially what we're trying to do with our business is communicate that.
That's pretty profound, actually. I don't know any other pizza place in downtown or Los Angeles County pushing that message. You know, of just inspiring people. So it's really priceless, actually.
All right, well, thank you. I'm glad. I mean, that's the difference, you know? I mean... We're not trying to compete on food.
You're not even thinking of competition. You're just like, you have your thing and you're just pushing it out.
I want to see who can play more. you know what I mean? Like,
Ball.
Yeah. Who can play the most and enjoy life the most? That's what's important.
So, how many different pizzas do you have on the menu
that are actually listed? Question. I think around,
more or less.
I think in the teens. I think it's in the teens, mid teens.
Okay, now are there any pizzas that are off the menu that you'll make, or is it just strictly what's there?
No, so this is the way Pizzanista works. Every Tuesday,
okay,
we do what's called $2 Tuesdays. So cheese, vegan cheese, and pepperoni slices are $2 from noon to midnight.
So for 12 hours.
Yeah, for 12 hours. That's our special.
$2 Tuesday, that's
because we do a special every day. So Wednesday through till supplies run out, or hopefully through Saturday is our goal. We run a pizza that's not on our menu. And actually we visited with our staff today and we said, we designed this system where every week, a different staff member is going to design that special pizza.
That's
we'll killer. All take turns. Like I'll do it 1 week. You know, our dishwasher will do it 1 week. Our slice counter guy will do it 1 week.
So you give everyone room to participate.
Yes. Yeah. We want them to be involved. Actually, we just encourage as much feedback from our staff as possible on all of our systems and how we operate the business and, you know, every aspect of it. We try to be very transparent and open, keep open lines of communication. We really like, strive to work as a team. And as much as, you know, the way we talk about our business is that we talk about it like we're a band.
Okay.
Okay. So we say, okay, we got a lead singer and a drummer and a bass player and a guitarist, and we got backup vocals. And So everyone's got to do their part to make music, but at some time in the song, you might need help, you know? So you might need a little drum roll, or you might need backup vocals, or you might need something. So that's how we communicate cooperation within the staff.
So you kind of like, you know, bring in a, you know, contribute, like be a component.
Absolutely. That's great. You know what? And like when you guys are all doing your thing and you're doing it and you're really focusing on your instrument, then that's when you make great music.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of a universal message.
But I mean, imagine if like you were like the drummer in a band and you like, you ran over to the guitar player and took the guitar out of his hand and were like, no, I'm playing guitar. Like, I mean, that would be a disaster.
No, I mean, that's a great analogy. Now, no, the garlic knots, I mean, when, you know, you just heard from Jeremy here, you know, those are some serious garlic knots. I mean, have you had a lot of feedback on those? You think you'll ever expand different flavors? I mean, garlic knots are garlic knots, but you think you'll ever try to change up some of the garlic knots you have?
I think, you know, I think it's an interesting thing to do. I think last year in LA Weekly or one of the local magazines, they had voted us, you know, they had like this garlic knot war between us and some other pizzerias. And I believe they named us, like they said that we had won that. I don't recall exactly what it was, but yeah, we've done pesto knots. My sister, who used to actually work for us, she's a musician.
Actually. Oh, really?
She plays cello, and she actually has like her own local kind of like, I don't want to call it skincare, but it's kind of like beauty products, you know, line that she does. It's called the Potion Shop. Really, really amazing stuff. Anyhow, off on a tangent, but she likes to do Rob knots. So we have broccoli Rob, which is also very New York. So she likes to take broccoli Rob and like ricotta cheese and put that all over her garlic knots.
Right.
So I think there's definitely room to expand. I mean, I like to eat them with like our meatballs. We make our own homemade meatballs, and we actually, you know, people love those. We sell out of them often, but those are great to have with the knots as well.
So it sounds like a lot of prep going into it. So like what time do you guys got to get there to prep before you open?
There's someone there every day at 8 a.m.
And you guys open at what time?
We open at noon.
Okay, so nice half day to prep.
Yeah, so you got, you know, we got, so our dough, like we actually prep the dough a day in advance because we allow it to ferment because we have a sourdough crust. It takes a little bit, it's a different process. So that stuff, gets prepped actually the day before it goes through this fermentation process. And then, yeah, the guy that comes in at 8 starts making the balls.
Okay.
So that we have pizza to make that day. And then right at 9, the folks come in and start prepping the pizza station and the salad station and all the rest of everything, sauce, cheese, all that. We make our own sauce.
Wow.
We blend our own cheese.
Everything's just from scratch.
Everything's made from scratch.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think with the, you know, obviously, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're running a business. Mm-hmm. Do you see the vegan demand getting bigger for you and maybe going a little deeper and get offering them more?
Yeah. I mean,
are you open to that?
Yeah, I'm totally open to it. I mean, you know, we love trying different vegan products yeah, we're really, like I said, you can't please everybody. And as much as we can, we try to cater to our clientele. But we do have a huge vegan, I guess, clientele.
We
have a lot of vegan. I mean, I actually recently was looking at the amount of vegan cheese we go through and I was amazed. You know?
More than you thought?
Yeah, a lot more.
Right. I mean, would you say like the vegan demands and the veggie demands are about the same?
Not well, maybe. It's hard to say, but it's funny, you know, that you have all these different food people have different requirements for eating, but honestly, at the end of the day, pepperoni wins. I mean, it's just like to make that stuff, you know. I mean, we've been getting more and more like interest in like gluten free, which we don't do.
Right.
We've experimented with it, but we haven't perfected it to our standard to offer it to the public. But you know, meat, people eat meat, you know, people like to eat meat. So that brings up an interesting topic. We recently visited with Lindy and Grundy, which is a local butcher shop. It's actually
it's like
moving.
A female team, right?
Yeah, it is a female team, yeah. A married couple, Amelia and Erica, really yeah. great ladies, just very professional and just amazing at what they do. And their shop is gorgeous. And we visit with them. So we want to move more in that direction of using like what I call pet to death meat instead of like, you know, humanely raised.
Well, why is it called pet to death? Oh, like yeah, cared for more.
Yeah, you know, just hugged to death, you know, yeah. like just, you know, so, you know, and they just have such an amazing product. And we recently, they were so kind. They gave us samples of different things to try on our pizza, which we made. So we're looking to, as they move more into the wholesale business, to use their products.
Wow.
Because they get local pastured organic meat. And they break it all down and make it all right there right here in LA. Not there. Well, there, I say there like it's on the other side of the country, but, you know, in West Hollywood.
Wow. So, I mean, it would be like, you know, that fresh.
Where yeah, it's like fresh they make it that morning. And just, you know, just product that we could be proud of and know where it came
get
from.
Get behind, which yeah, is just, most important. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it adds a little cost, but. We think it's worth it.
But I think that's what the clientele signs up for. Like yeah. they have their, you know, their, they know what they want. Everyone has their own identity walking in yeah. to your restaurant yeah. as your guest.
Yeah.
Whether it's like you say, you know, people from the art world or skateboarding or radio or et cetera, television. And, you know, they have their identity. They know what they want to eat. So they don't mind paying a little more maybe.
I hope so. You know? I hope not. I mean, you know, it's funny because with our beer and wine license, you know, we.
Let's talk about that. You don't have that yet.
We don't. We just got our, through the zoning administrator, you know, you go through this whole process to get what's called a conditional use permit. And the person that writes your determination letter is a person called a zoning administrator. And, you know, when you get a beer and wine license or apply for one, you know, it's interesting because you start meeting with all these sort of like neighborhood groups, BIDs, neighborhood councils and groups and people who are vested in a community who care about it. And, you know, and you try, you know, our interest was to gain their support, you know, for what we wanted. So we really asked for a lot with our license. We wanted to be able to deliver beer and wine with an order, and we wanted to be able to have offsite sales. So if you wanted to come and get a pizza and a six pack or a bottle of wine to go, you could take it with you. So we're hoping that we satisfied all of the, well, we know we satisfied all of the neighborhood groups and councils because we got letters of support from all of them. So we'll see with our determination letter, and then we'll go after the actual license.
Right. I mean, it's so much red tape and patience.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, you know. It
comes with the territory.
It does, right? You know. I mean, it's when you start serving beer and wine and alcohol, you know, obviously the state and the local law enforcement and people who are in authority want to be sure that business operators are responsible, obviously, you know, and that they have the best interests of the community in mind. So you just have to go through these things and sort of like, you know, it's just part of the process. You know?
Right.
So,
I mean, it just doesn't come. You got to really go after it and make it happen.
Yeah. And it's expensive and it's time consuming. And, but I think it'll be worth it in the end. You know, we have a lot of families with young children who, you know, as much as we love Tony's Saloon and we love to send folks over there to have a drink with their dinner, you know, we do get people who want to have dinner, who have children, who don't necessarily want to be in the bar.
Right. They want to maybe have a beer.
Yeah, and a glass of
water. And, you
exactly.
know, yeah. Yeah. So that's what that's the demand that will serve is what you're saying.
Yeah, that. Yeah. And then also that'll give us another opportunity to work with local beer producers, you know, so that's an interest of
get
ours.
Very boutique with what's being made here.
Exactly.
And Angel City is right around the corner there.
Yeah, Angel City. So we actually just did a tasting at Angel City, which was really nice. I was in Kinko's, you know, laminating some things, and someone from Angel City was next to me, and I just kind of struck up a conversation with him, and he said, "Oh, you got to come over and try some beer." So anyhow, we got an email from him that night, and my wife set up a time for us to meet. So we went over, and they served us some flights, and yeah, it was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the places, you know, you like, you call your surfing and skateboarding plane.
Uh-huh.
So what beach do you surf at?
I knew that would come up. I like to surf in between like Santa Cruz and Baja.
We'll leave it at that.
I actually like to surf all over the world. Like, I've been to Costa Rica, which was really fun, but I really just don't like to talk about the specific spots.
Well, you want to keep your spots, man.
It's right? Not just mine. It's just
with respect to
the culture of surfing. You know, it's just like, if you surf, you will find spots and you'll enjoy them. And that's great.
That's part of the process, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with skateboarding.
Yeah.
At times. If you actually venture out and find...
It actually is that way in skating. In skating, the thing is, the environment is such an integral part of the visual language of like communicating skateboarding in videos that, you know, and it's a way for, you know, skateboarders are brands themselves. So, you know, that environment plays a huge role in how they communicate themselves as a brand to like their audience or their fans. So yeah, a lot of times skateboarders want to keep spots a secret for that reason, because they don't want someone blowing up the spot where like it ends up happening where
eventually
a million tricks get done at this spot. But you know, I think for a lot of skaters, and I understand the importance of that, they want to be able to showcase or express themselves in a unique way. And the uniqueness gets diluted when 100 other people have done a trick on that same spot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the art of it, I think, is finding a spot, right? And then actually expressing yourself on that spot.
Exactly.
And I think that's like, you know, that's where the language comes across.
Totally.
Like,
especially with street skating. That's street skating. That's like all a huge part of what street skating is about.
And that's why skateboarding gets regional, right? Like very regional as far as like, I mean, at one point, I mean, certain spots, where, you know, in LA, maybe there's more, I don't know, what, bang to walls in certain areas. Mm-hmm. So those skaters that are from that area skate that terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Etc.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, like in Arizona, they got ditches, you know, they skate
a lot of
ditches, you know,
yeah.
LA, you know, especially, you know, in the 70s, you know, pool skating was huge, you know, and then like obviously street skate. I mean, in LA in the 90s, you had like Lockwood, which was a school, you know, in kind of near, I guess, West Hollywood it was very, very famous, like LA street spot. I mean, you just had to have a clip there.
Did you ever go to Kenner Canyon?
I did skate Kenner Canyon. That was another kind of like older,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like 70s, early 80s, like street skating spot.
Up to like early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, that, of course, now I'm sure it's a different story with the internet and the find things quicker.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, but, you know,
it's funny. I was with my, like, so we do a thing with my staff, because a lot of them skate. On Mondays, we go out and skate together.
That's awesome.
So, like, we meet at the restaurant, we carpool, and we go. Like, today we went to Highland Park and skated Garvanza.
Right.
And it was cool because, like, we're driving around, and Ose, one of the kids that works for me, is from Massachusetts, and he's just recently moved to LA, and he's just like, bugging out on all the spots, you know, and I'm not really looking around for them, you know, because I'm not out trying to film clips, but you must have driven by three spots today where he's pulling his hair out like, oh my God, there's that spot.
He saw that spot in the videos. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
And could tell you, and he could tell you who skated it and what trick they did and what they were wearing and what sticker they had on their board. And I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's totally enthusiastic, right?
Yeah.
So what would you say, skateboarding has, what did you get from that translates into helping you with the day-to-day operation of your restaurant?
That's a good question. From skateboarding, you know, I think the thing that I've learned is that skateboarding is difficult. You know, when you know, there's no manual, you know, there's no, you know, trainer, there's no coach, you know,
right.
you have to, you see things either that have been done or things that you can imagine doing that haven't been done. And you try those things and you just deal with the process. And part of the process is dealing with failure, like a lot, you know, because it takes time to figure out how to do certain tricks.
Sure. And,
you know, that's one of the things that I think, and a lot of, you know, it's kind of this thing that in skateboarding people call skater's advantage. It's like you have this process that you've done over and over. You've kind of mastered this process of like having to deal with failure until you make something.
Is that what they call it, skater's advantage?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a term, but some people think of it that way.
That's really interesting.
So as a skateboarder, you've learned how to deal with failure, pain, suffering, disappointment, and just how to get over it and
persevere.
Yeah, persevere past all that, because you know, when you're jumping down handrails and stairs and it gets gnarly, you know, and the mental challenge of having to stay focused in the midst of like risking your life to land this trick easily translates into how to start and run and own and operate a business. I mean, if you can risk your life jumping down something and do something that takes intense focus and physical
commitment,
you know, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual. I mean, every part of your being is wrapped up in landing this trick. You know, you just take that and you translate it into, oh, I'm going to start a business. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it, but.
But you're not going to break your hip.
You're not going to break your hip, but it becomes, you know, when you take that mindset and you apply that to anything else that you do in life, you have the tools. You have them. You've used them, and you just have to focus them in a different way. But
that's really profound.
That's one of the things that I think skateboarders have. A lot of skaters, unfortunately, don't know they have that, and you know,
maybe because they kind of block that, they block themselves.
Well, that and like, you know, there's kind of this anti-establishment attitude in skateboarding. You know that. Very much can, I shouldn't say it holds people back, but it just focuses them in a certain way. You know, they're
it creates boundaries.
It does. It creates boundaries. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that happens with a lot of people that just, you know, skate and for fun, mm-hmm. or skate maybe for a living. Like they create boundaries. Maybe yeah. they just aren't experienced enough to realize that you have to be open.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be, but if you want to do other stuff, you do. You
yeah.
know, I mean, it's taken, you know, I was very much that way as a child, you know, when I was involved in skateboarding, just there was nothing else existed. There wasn't anything else. You know, it was like eat, breathe, dream, sleep, eat, drink. It was all skateboarding, you know, it was just like nothing else existed, you know, and but I think it takes that kind of intense focus for people to, you know, excel and get to a certain place in something that they're passionate about.
You know, it's funny. I you know, I like to watch a lot of interviews mm-hmm. with different walks of life, whether it's actors that are, you know, just kind of, you know, just like mainstream or very, you know, or those character actors that are great with their craft. And mm-hmm. the same thing with musicians and athletes and politicians. I just like to, like, you know, watch Charlie Rose or mm-hmm. other talk shows and just watch it and immerse myself and just really listen. And I've been stumbling upon a lot of people mentioning the power of visualization,
mm-hmm.
talking about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you know that, you know, what's funny is I think a lot of skateboarders do that. They picture themselves pulling a trick off
mm-hmm.
and then they do it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, I mean, don't you agree? Like that's
absolutely
part of a skater's advantage. Is owning that trait, the power of visualization.
Absolutely, and without even knowing it. And I think that, you know, a lot of parents might say, oh, you know, get outside, quit playing video games, you know. I have seen video games. I believe that skateboarding video games have contributed so much to the progression of skateboarding, because young people who are passionate about skateboarding spend so much time in front of that video game, and they're basically, it's a visualization exercise. Yeah. That is them. They're doing it. Yeah, it's a joystick. It's in their hands. But there's something going on there that is being like taken from virtual reality and translated into actual reality. And if you, you know, for people who aren't into skateboarding, I mean, you know, go get a copy of the new Girl video. Pretty sweet. You know, or get the new Death Wish video that's coming out March 30th. And tell me that video games and visualization haven't contributed to the progression of skateboarding. I mean, your mind will be blown. You just can't even,
what's happening?
You can't even comprehend like the technicality that's involved in what's going down, and the just the it's mind boggling, you know? I mean, there's guys now, you know, doing a flip trick is in skateboarding, basically where your board leaves your feet. Okay. It flips in the air, and then then it lands back on your feet in the air. And then they'll like to grind, like say down a handrail, but not even just like a 50-50, maybe like a frontside crooked grind. And then, which is really technical and hard, and then flip out of that at the bottom of the rail and roll. I mean, it's just, it's insane.
Right.
No, the impossible is happening, you know? I mean, things that I just never even in my wildest imagination thought would be possible on a skateboard is going down.
I mean, that says a lot coming from someone with your history that's, mm-hmm. you know, so rich in skateboarding and comes from a professional background and still does it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right about the video games translating into some sort of mind exercise.
Yeah, and it's belief, like you said.
Self-belief.
Like these kids believe that they can. Right. I mean, we were at Volcom yesterday in Costa Mesa at this amateur competition. And at the end of the actual competition, they do what's called a best trick competition.
Okay.
And it's like a 25-minute jam. And it's usually on one obstacle. And yesterday it was on a handrail, like maybe a 10-stair handrail. And it was insane. It was insane. I mean, this kid did exactly what I was telling you about. He did a kickflip backside tail slide to like big spin flip out.
Which, off the handrail.
Off the handrail. And I was like, that's insane. It's insane. It's.
I mean, the time is so short when you're going down.
It's just, there's so much going on there. There's so much going on. There's so much weird stuff happening.
Yeah, it's just also, I mean, like the impossible, I mean, there is no impossible no more.
No, you know? There's not.
So talking about, you know, where skateboarding is at now, how often do you skateboard? You said every day, right?
I try to skateboard a little bit every day. I skateboard like at least 4 or 5 times a week, you know, for at least like an hour or two.
And you always kind of know where you're going, or do you just wake up on a whim and say, I'm going to go here today?
I try to change it up. Like I go usually once a week, I head down to Vans in Orange County and I skate the combi pool. So I skate that pool down there. And then I like to skate Garvanza in Highland Park, Lincoln Park, which is in Lincoln Heights over here. And then sometimes, some days I just street skate around LA downtown.
Gotcha.
Just cruise around.
Just go for the cruise.
Yeah, just leave my house and just cruise around.
That's awesome. I remember one time I was on the bus and I was going over, I think it was 7th. Oh, no, the next street on 6th.
6th Street.
You're on a longboard. I want to say a longboard.
Yeah.
Or you're just going down, coming towards the bus.
Uh-huh.
And going down the hill.
Yeah.
That must have been like right when Pizza Nisa opened. Like,
yeah, I mean,
hours.
I like to skate. Down the bridges, you know, and the hills, right? I mean,
Reminiscent of San Francisco, like bombing hills up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not like San Francisco. But there is a clip in Future Primitive where Lance Mountain skates down the 6th Street Bridge.
Right,
and
I remember that.
Occasionally, on the 6th Street Bridge, the way the trusses are built, they're embankments. And you can actually skate them if you go up onto the bridge. Like at the very, where those trusses meet the sidewalk, there's actually a bank there. And you can skate up on them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
wow.
It's kind of like a spot.
That's a, you just revealed one of your spots.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. It's kind of a hard one to skate.
Right.
Kind of like a spot you would skate if you maybe if you want to get a photo for something, but it's not like a spot you want a session.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So do you have any, as a restaurant owner perspective, mm-hmm. do you have any influences? I want to ask you about your influences. If you have any inspirations mm-hmm. In all areas of your life, you mm-hmm. know, we get with surfing, skateboarding, let's talk about the restaurant business mm-hmm. or chefs. Do you have any mm-hmm. People that inspire you in that industry?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I love the guys at Animal, Son of a Gun, you know, Vinny and Johnny. I think they're mm-hmm. doing amazing things in LA. Roy, you know, Kogi Truck.
Yep.
And A-Frame, you know, he's doing amazing stuff. And I really love Lindy and Grundy. They're not, you know, a restaurant per se, but I really love their business and what they're doing. And Joseph downtown, you know, Baco Mercat, Bar Ama, you know, those are great, great restaurants, you know, for downtown LA. And they're, you know, those concepts are a lot different than ours, but they're just doing great food and creating great environments, you know, for people to dine at, you know. And you know, Vinny and Johnny, their spots are not in downtown, but in LA, I think they have some great restaurants.
Right. Now, do you feel like, just like we talk about, like intuition and stuff like that, like, do you feel like right now, like downtown is just like the best is still yet to come? I mean, just more people are coming out and things are growing, you know, as far as foot traffic and more people are willing to dine out here. Do you think people are becoming more open to that?
I think so. I mean, I live near Church and State. And Bestia, and you know, those are two, you know, kind of upscale restaurants, and I definitely think they're destinations for people.
Sure.
And, even Pizzanista has become a destination for folks. I mean, we get people from Redondo Beach and Venice Beach and Malibu, and people coming from the west side to come downtown, and we get people from even as far as Costa Mesa and Huntington and Downey and Whittier. Everywhere. I mean, we're getting folks from all over. So I definitely think that, you know, people are looking at downtown LA and the restaurant scene in particular, and there are a lot more places to go to.
And I think people are figuring out that, like, if you're coming from, like, a Whittier, you could take the Gold Line into Union Station,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you want to make a night of it. I mean, you take public transportation around town, and you seem to like it.
Yeah, I think that as public transportation becomes more available, we definitely see more people using it. And you're right. People can take the Gold Line, Union Station, and that's Union Station is an easy commute to get to downtown from Union Station. You know, it's very close, and it's very close to Little Tokyo, you know, where there are also great restaurants.
Exactly.
You know, you got
and the museum.
And the museum. Yep. You got the Geffen Mocha there, which is a great place to go. And actually walking up to Grand Street to go to Mocha or the Disney Concert Hall, it's a great walk.
Great
it's
views.
Not far.
Yeah.
And you can actually, I think at all times of the day and night, go up into the Disney Concert Hall garden if you walk up the steps, which is a great place to just hang out.
Sure.
In downtown LA. And then, you know, you got the Broad Museum, which is opening across the street from Mocha there on Grand. So there's a lot to do down here. And back to your comment about public transportation. Yeah, my wife and I are huge fans of it. We like to take the bus as often as possible.
That's
recently
awesome.
We did drive to Silver Lake to pick up my sister, but we decided when we got there we'll just hop on the 2, and we went to Hollywood on the 2 and ate at Amuso and Frank's and went and watched the Morrissey concert at Hollywood High. All on the bus.
You didn't have to worry about paying for parking.
Nope.
Or dealing with all the riffraff on the road.
No, it was great. It's fast. It was convenient, and it was nice to just not have to drive.
Yeah. I mean, you don't feel like you feel like you're on the ball and chain thing when you're trying to get to many places.
Well, I mean, the thing is in LA, it's like, well, this is one thing that we really pride ourselves on at Pizzanista. We have free parking, you know,
That's
you try
cool.
to park around LA. I mean, it's you know, the meters are competing with the parking lots these days. You can pay, it's like $5 an hour. Who is carrying around wads of quarters in their parking, exactly, in their pockets?
And now it's like during the day sometimes.
It's insane.
The new parking structure, you know, they don't have an attendant.
No.
So you just walk up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're cutting their costs and they're competing with the meters.
Totally exactly competing. They're totally competing. It's insane.
And it's like, dude, this is what you're spending your energy on. And I understand it's a business.
And yeah, it is, you know, but like, for instance, like when we go to the Hollywood Bowl, you know, it's so nice to just get on the train. It drops you off right there. And another thing that I do is I'm a huge fan of motorcycle racing.
Okay.
And I go down to Anaheim for the Supercross. I just go to Union Station.
Metrolink to Anaheim Station.
Yeah. Just get off. Done. Don't have to park.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's easy. It's a great ride. If I have a book I want to read, I'm reading instead of worrying about who just cut in front of me in traffic.
I mean, in the morning, you know, I live in Boyle Heights, mm-hmm, you know, right on Whittier Boulevard where it starts, where six turns into Whittier. Mm-hmm. And I work in Hollywood right by the Capitol building. And, you know, right in front of my gate is the line 18. It's 24 hours. So I go over the bridge, 10 minutes, get on the red line, 20 minutes, and I'm in Hollywood. And I write all my emails underground for work.
Yeah.
I write about 30 emails. And when I go get up,
just hit send.
Yeah, and then as soon as I get up to the street level, like zap, 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 they're all gone. And it's like, all right, I'm caught up.
That's awesome.
You know, and it's like, while you're driving, you can't do that.
No. Well, you can try, but you know what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so many.
You either end up in the back of someone's car or you get a ticket.
There's so many more pros than cons when you travel via public transportation. Yeah. I think when we're off air, I was speaking with you about the pass-I-buy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, it's kind of off the radar because, you know, you have the regular MTA monthly pass or day pass, but there's something called the Easy Pass that you can buy at Ralph's, and you can't buy it from the MTA turnstile. So it's $84 a month, but you could use it. You can't use it on MetroLink because that's Amtrak, but you could use it on any Metro bus, MTA bus, and train line. Blue line, green line, gold line, red line. But like if you ever have to go into like, you know, Montebello, Whittier on a bus, you could take their bus lines and the dash around like to Griffith Park.
Mm-hmm.
And when you divide $84 by 30 days, it's like $285 a day unlimited. So it still beats the Metro Day Pass.
Yeah, it does.
So it's, I mean, there's just.
And you're going to spend that on gas anyway.
I mean, $285
way more than that
a day?
Gas.
Yeah. I mean, I could go from Boyle Heights to work in Hollywood, and then after work, go to my studio in North Hollywood, and then come back to downtown on the red line and catch a show, and that's $285.
Yeah, that's so great.
That's
great. Yeah. I mean, not this Halloween, but the past Halloween, we went up to Universal because we
Misfits.
Went. Yeah, so we went and saw that show up there.
That's how we went also on the red line.
And yeah, we went on the red line. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we loved it. I mean, and all the costumes and all the crazy outfits for Halloween.
Yeah.
I mean, It was entertainment from the second we left to the second
you
we
see
got
all these
back.
Characters.
Yeah.
Just like,
I mean, we were characters too. Yeah. I was like Misfits cowboy, you
what?
Know, like I had the, you know, I had
you did the Fiend Club.
I did the Fiend Club face. And then I was like a cowboy. Actually, I'm sorry. I was a sheriff.
So, dude, put some pictures up.
Yeah. I think I have pictures of that.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. So, now going back to like, you know, people that you like, whose people's work that inspire you. Mm-hmm. You talked about the restaurant industry in LA. What about skateboarding?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have anyone in that world that, you know, when you were growing up that actually really kind of inspired you to push harder? People that you used to like watching videos of?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm so fortunate, you know, in the skateboarding side of things, you know, a lot of the guys that I grew up, watching and idolizing are close friends of mine, you know, Steve Caballero. I was best man at his wedding. You know, I mean, I worshiped that guy growing up, you know, and, you know, we're such great friends now, one of my closest friends and so fortunate. And, you know, Mark Gonzalez, obviously the most iconic street skater, you know, he's one of my good friends. You know, every time he's in LA, he's at Pizzanista, or he comes and kidnaps me really and takes me on these amazing field trips, you know, and, you know, we're in touch. I mean, I talk to Mark I guess almost every day because he emails me something crazy.
I love it.
You know, Jim Thiebaud has been a huge inspiration for many, many years. Tommy Guerrero, Lance Mountain, you know, all these guys, Ray Barbie. And what's great is that they all come and eat at my restaurant when they're in town. And, you know, Julian Stranger, huge influence. I mean, the list goes on. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, you know, and I was younger, a lot of the older guys were influential. But then as I got more into skating and, you know, got sponsored, you know, you kind of start being influenced by your peers, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, guys that I grew up with skating that were influential to me were like Henry Sanchez, Mike Carroll, Javonte Turner, Rudy, Guy, Gabriel, you know, Rodriguez, Guy Mariano, Rudy Johnson. These were all kind of guys that I grew up with. Skating or was around at times, you know, like the LA guys like Guy and Rudy and Gabriel and Paulo, they were kind of LA. We all rode for Pal Peralta as amateurs. So they were kind of like the LA Ams, and right. Javonte and myself were like the NorCal Pal sure. Peralta Ams. So, but we would get together at times. You know, Frankie Hill was a huge influence. He was a 90s, late 80s, early 90s pro. But I mean, there's just so many, you know, many guys that I appreciate, like their style of skating or what they contributed to the progression sure. of skateboarding.
You sure. know? And is your approach to surfing more of a not really, you know, no reason to maybe look at another surfer to get inspired, but maybe just go out there to do it for the athletic benefit and therapy because you're in the water?
You know, surfing, I had a love-hate relationship with surfing for like 20 years, you know, and then, you know, mainly just because it's so hard. I mean, it is hard, you know, surfing. Okay, like getting on a longboard and riding, that's one thing, you know, that's not that hard. I mean, you can find a little wave, pop up on a longboard and kind of ride it to shore, right? But getting good at surfing and understanding the ocean and getting into stuff that's like head high and bigger, you know, it gets, it's challenging, you know, physically, mentally. And for me, I just really wanted to rise to that challenge. And also I just, it's like the roots of skateboarding, right. You know, so I just wanted to get more in touch with that side of skateboarding. And that's why I really, and I just, now I just really love surfing for what it is, you know, just being in the water. And, there's nothing like it. There's just nothing I've ever done is like surfing. Like when you're riding on a wave, it's just, there's no way to really explain that to people.
Unless you do it.
You have to do it. And to get there to the point where you can do it, on that level that I'm talking about, not like I'm a great surfer, but I can ride the bigger waves. It's great, you know, it's a magical kind of wonder world that you can never experience unless you get out there and ride a 10-foot wave, you know? I mean, it's just...
And it just seems, I mean, I've never done it, mm-hmm. but I have friends and I come across people like you mm-hmm. Through doing things like this, you know? It just seems like you just really got to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know? Very much so.
I mean, yeah.
It's all about the moment.
Yeah, I mean, because that wave is not going to be there forever.
No, it's not. It's very short. It's very short.
Right. So that's a big part of it too, right?
I mean, yeah, it's all about being in the moment. You know, it's all about that moment, and the wave. You know, that wave was generated thousands of miles out in the middle of the ocean, and it's just. On its way to its death, you know, and you're just getting to participate in it, like just right at that last second before it's gone, you know, and it's neat, man, you know, and unlike skateboarding or motocross or snowboarding, I don't really snowboard, but unlike some of these other things that I do, like skateboarding, like the vert ramp's not trying to crash on top of your head. Right. You know, I mean, these
very
waves.
Very stable and very predictable.
Exactly.
Versus the ocean.
The ocean, it's living. There's big animals in the ocean.
Yeah.
it's a different environment. And the waves, like, you know, once you get on it, I mean, it's like, especially like bigger waves, like they're going to crush you, you know, like you got to.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
So back to the restaurant.
And you're in it. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're in it.
You're in their
world.
You're
not in the cement. Like, you can't get in the cement ramp, you know? It's like, you're just on it.
That's a very good analogy. Like, you're in the wave.
You're in it.
And
you're in it.
And it's
you're
living
in it.
While it's moving.
Yeah, it's a trip.
So back to Pizzanista. Mm-hmm. After doing the Christian Hosoi book signing, mm-hmm. Do you have anything currently lined up? Like anything sort of like an event like that?
Yeah, we do actually.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we do. We have, so for Cinco de Mayo, we visited with SA Studios. So with Esteban Oriol.
Oh yeah, cartoon.
Not so much with.
Oh, Esteban.
Yeah, Esteban. Oriol, yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to like get it all mixed up. It's really, we're doing a collaboration with Esteban. So. Yeah. We're taking a really iconic photograph that he's taken, and we're going to print a pizza box, and he's going to design a pizza, and we're going to have an event for Cinco de Mayo where we release this, and it'll be all month. And so that's our next event, and they're going to bring, like, you know, the Lowriders, and we'll have some music. And so for on the 4th of May, we're going to have an event in the parking lot and at Pizzanista and at Tony's. We're all doing it together.
Oh, so it's a collaboration then.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and the collaborations with us, with Esteban and Pizzanista. So that'll be, you know, it's just another great way for us to communicate our brand and do something interesting with a local LA artist and like an LA icon, really.
Sure. You know?
I mean, he's such an icon.
I mean, his photography.
Capturing like LA culture.
Right. You know? And, you know, and like immersing himself in like the Latino culture.
Totally.
And I've, you know, at one point he was DJing for Cypress Hill on tour.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very like in it on all levels.
Yeah.
And when I heard his name, I just blurted out Mr. Cartoons. Yeah. I know they were.
Yeah, well, they have SA Studios.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a marketing agency.
Right.
And so they have an amazing business down there, you know, and they're doing Sanctioned, which is their car care line that Mr. Cartoon launched. And they're a neat company, man. I mean, they Gangster Squad, they did all the posters and stuff.
I was blown away. Yeah. I was blown away by the street marketing on that and seeing like something like, you know, the old LA Hollywood with cats like Sean Penn, and then seeing Mr. Cartoon, his name behind the imagery of what's on the street to promote it, these billboards. I was like, wow, that's total like 1980s, like LA writing style.
Yeah.
And that's used to promote a Sean Penn movie.
It's amazing.
You know, it is amazing. It's like, because it's so unconventional.
It was unconventional.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, that's good for him. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And we just love that because, I mean, we like to believe that we're authentic and they're authentic. I mean, they are just so authentic, you know, for LA, you know. They are LA, you know. So it's really an honor for us to be able to do something with Esteban and to be involved with SA Studios and to have an event.
And that's May 4th.
May 4th, yeah.
Okay, great. Also, what I wanted to ask you about was...
prior to that, if I can talk about one other thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's another company called Death Wish Skateboards.
Skateboard company, right.
They're a skateboard brand. So actually on the 15th of March, which is this
Friday,
coming Friday, we're launching the Death Wish Pizza.
So okay,
they're doing a pizza. And it has the Death Wish gang logo cut out of it. So when the promotion is that they have a video that they're premiering on the 30th in LA. So, you know, passes to this video are just, they're pretty much gone. I mean, they're so highly coveted, you know. So we're giving away 20 of them. Wow. So 10 pairs. So when you buy a slice of the Death Wish pizza, or if you get a whole pizza. So for each slice, we're giving away a raffle ticket.
Okay.
And for the whole pizza, you get 10 tickets. We're going to have a drawing on the 29th, and 10 lucky winners are going to win a pair of passes to go to the premiere. And three of the winners will actually win like a signed deck and the video and a hat and like this whole product capsule that Death Wish is giving.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's great. I mean, like, just the fact that Pizzanista could adapt to different subcultures and facilitate something so sincere for people to come enjoy. I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're excited about it. I mean, we designed a box. Well, we didn't. They designed a box. So there'll be a Death Wish has a pizza box and then their pizza. And then we designed some stickers.
It's awesome.
So, I mean, it's just, we're just having fun with it.
You're playing.
Yeah, we're playing. We're trying to play.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and you know, the skaters are amazing. We're talking, you know, Jim Greco, Eric Ellington, trying to think of all the guys that ride for them. Slash, Neen Williams. I don't remember all the guys that are sponsored by them right offhand, but I know Greco.
Greco rides for them?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And he's going to have an amazing part. I mean, he's been working hard.
Wow.
It's I can't wait to see the video. It's going to be incredible.
Slash as in Slasher?
No, Slash. Brian Hansen.
Brian Hansen.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting about Brian Hansen is he actually is a partner in a beer company called St. Archer. They're out of San Diego. Okay. So we're hoping to carry their beer, even though they're not from LA. But a bunch of skateboarders are involved in this brewing company that's a microbrew, you know, craft beer company out of San Diego. So
that's exciting.
Yeah. So we're interested in that. And it's neat. There's a lot of neat stuff going on.
Yeah. And I just think that it's really awesome how, like, people that, really connect with, you know, skateboarding and good food prepared in a very like boutique and cared way, how you guys present it. Like they could be informed through the internet and it just really be like connected with you guys. You know what I mean? And be up to date with, you know, all these events. And when you guys have something off for like a special, like $2 Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. And I think, you know, people care enough for quality and not to, you know, have so much faith in the chains.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you know, look, that's one of the things I wanted to mention about our beer and wine license. Cause we wanted to do delivery and takeout and all that. And I said, you know, one of the things I said to the folks from the LAPD, cause they were kind of having issues with that. I said, listen, if a kid, like young kids are not our customer. I mean, they are, in the sense that we offer like some specials that are affordable to them. But I mean, some of our pizzas are like $30, you know, like kids, young kids don't want to spend $30 on a pizza. They're definitely going to Domino's.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they're kind of worried that like we'd be delivering booze to like some minors, you know, but yeah, we're not.
The demographic is definitely like a middle-aged established.
It's definitely older. It's definitely folks that are interested in what they're putting in their body,
right?
You know, where it comes from, quality, you know, I mean, exactly. That's just like, you know, yeah, that's what we're about.
So the LAPD was giving you a little grief for,
well,
you
know, I mean, they weren't giving us grief, but you know, they wanted to really button up like how we were going to, you know, monitor like the delivery of alcohol.
And you had to bring up the demographic as a main point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like these kids, you know, you buy a pizza and a salad, it's $40.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, and it's like,
it really is.
And I go that route because that's what I've ordered. It's like salad and it's like, you know, it's not Domino's, dude. It's Pizzanista. It's quality, you know, and it's, exactly. You want fresh food. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to eat some comfort food like pizza, it's going to be fresh and with good ingredients.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously.
I mean, some folks like to eat fast food and that's fine. You know, they can do that, but we're not that.
Right. It's more of like a restaurant.
Yeah.
Prepared, I mean, very well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I like to think we're right in the middle, you know, we're not like a high end restaurant. It's casual and we're not fast food. You know, we're in the middle, you know, you pay a little more for it. We pay a little more for it.
Yeah. It's all, I mean,
know?
It's,
I
not,
mean, we're, yeah. and we make it, you know, we're actually, there's people back there. We have a mill. And they take the tomatoes and they're back there milling.
Working.
Them.
It's labor.
Yeah. I mean, it's not tomato sauce from a can.
Yeah. It's not like a big rig pulls in front of Pizzanista every night and like throws in a bunch of prepared meats.
No, we actually have to make that stuff.
So. That's great. I mean, that's what it's all about. As far as the downtown area goes, I wanted to like create a transparent picture to people listening and that will listen to this when it's archived. How much change have you seen in the last 9 years in downtown?
In the last 9 years, I've seen a lot of change in downtown. You know, obviously in our zone, the Arts District, you know, there's a tremendous amount of gentrification there and development. You know, we're seeing, you know, like Bestia came in, the Handsome Coffee Roasters guys have come in, Earth Cafe is down Earth, there. Yep. What else do you got? You have, you know, there's talk of other restaurants going in, and Lucky Brand moved their headquarters there to the Arts District.
Really?
Yeah, right. That's on the HQ river is. There. Yeah, their world headquarters is right there. They built a brand new building like on the LA River, right at like Palmetto and Santa Fe.
Wow.
You know, you have the One Santa Fe project that's happening. So between 1st Street and 4th Street, across the street from SciArc, you've got 400 units of housing and retail going in and a park. So it's definitely changing there a lot. And then in downtown proper, you've kind of got this Bring Back Broadway thing happening.
I went to a play last month.
Yeah. So you got the whole theater district being, you know, there's a lot of incentives for businesses to come in there. You got Figaro just opened down there. You know, I think, you know, other folks are looking to, you know, the Ace Hotel's going there on Broadway. So there's a lot of stuff happening, and it's great. I think it's good for downtown LA. I mean, Los Angeles is such a cultural icon, you know, and people look to LA and Los Angeles in particular and its surrounding regions like the West Side, Venice, Santa Monica, Hollywood, and just like the lifestyle people live here. And I think our downtown, we owe it to have an amazing downtown.
Well, being from here, I mean,
you know, they got the talk of another football stadium, you know, and you got like the whole Staples Center area.
LA Live.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like there's a lot going on down here.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can't ignore it. I mean, being from here.
If you want to do something, you better get in here now because.
Trust me, in a year from now, 2 years from now.
It's going to be tough.
Right. I mean, growing up here, you know, you would go to basketball games and concerts. And it was like you'd have to drive all the way to Inglewood to the Forum off the beaten path, like, you know, by LAX. And that's such a great area. Go see concerts or the Lakers play or the Kings.
Yeah, we went and saw Prince there.
Oh, yeah, we did the residency, right?
Yeah, and Guns N' Roses.
Yep. But, like, now it's like it feels like you're in a real city. Like, you know, I go to a lot of Clipper games and Laker games and hockey and, you know, catch gigs at Nokia Theater and so forth. And you could just go over the bridge and you're just like, okay, we're going to go to the Clipper game at 1230. Then tonight I'm going to go see Scorpions, you know, like just across, you know, 100 yards.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this is like, you know, it's right there, you know, in the Mecca of the downtown skyline. Yeah. And before you'd have to like, you know, I'm going to Long Beach Arena for this. And, you know, to the Forum for this. And you'd have to drive 30 minutes each way. But it just really feels like a true functioning, breathing city now.
Yeah. And you got the X Games down there in the summer.
Yeah, every August.
You know, so that's another huge event that happens right here that brings a lot of attention to downtown. So, yeah, it's changed. You know, when I used to come down here in the 80s and 90s and skate in downtown LA, it was scary.
It was pretty grim,
No, it was like escape from New York, like end of the world. You know?
Right.
I mean, it was just
once it was
unbelievable.
6 o'clock, yeah. The lights went off, everyone closed, and it would just be crackheads walking.
It was insane. It was like zombie land.
Now.
You know? I mean, there's some of that still, but it's definitely not like it was.
It's nowhere near.
In every
zombie land.
The middle of every street, like in an intersection, was like, you know, barrel fires, you know?
Yeah. Like Escape from New York.
Yeah. I mean, granted, people needed to keep warm and that's fine, but I mean, it was insane.
Yeah. There is like stuff happens. What's going on down that alley?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just really an interesting time because, you know, like what businesses were existing. It was like, you know, the jewelry district and people just clear out. And then all of a sudden it's just kind of this whole like hub for riffraff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if, you know, there's really nothing going on.
Yeah.
This is downtown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's come alive. And it is. I think it's exciting. Like it's, you know, you want to be around it. You want to, you know, venture off and like, oh, you know, here's Pizza Nista and there's the Nike skate park. Mm-hmm. And this is all just, you know, there's LA Live and there's so much to do in such a short, geographically, you know, it's a short distance.
Yeah, no doubt.
So it's exciting.
Yeah, but it's really cool. And the other thing that's really neat about downtown LA is there's a lot of interesting and beautiful architecture.
There is.
So
Union Station.
The bones of like downtown proper, like the buildings, there's some real gems if people want to do something interesting down here. You know, they're just beautiful buildings.
I mean, if someone just...
Don't rip them down, you know?
Oh, please, yeah. I mean...
you know?
Just for someone to come with a camera that really wants to take note of just existing architecture.
Yeah.
There's so much for the camera eye.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And, with that being said, man, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me as a guest.
Pleasure. We made it happen.
Yeah.
Just went for it.
Yep.
Right? It's like, he's down to come. Let's do it. Yeah. So we did our doubleheader tonight. But this will be circulated tomorrow on iTunes and we'll share the link and, you know, we'll have fun. Thanks.
That's what it's about.